retired detective Sergeant Darren Birch, author of Twisted But True, escorts you through a zone, the Badge Zone, where stories from those behind the badge range from the bizarre to the supernatural. Welcome to a place of strange happenings, as you're about to enter the Badge Zone.
Frank used to have this nightmare over and over, and he'd wake up in tears, and he never told anybody else about it but me. What was it?
Drowning. I dreamed that I dove into the water and I went down deep, but when I turned around to make it back to the top, I couldn't, no matter how hard I swam.
Drowning. He dived into the water and it didn't matter how hard he tried to get back to the surface, he couldn't. That's right, isn't it?
Not even close. No. You know, the first time I met you and then the next 10 or 12 times after that, I thought, what a jerk. But then I got to know you a little bit, right? And I convinced myself that I saw something human in you. You know, maybe he's just a little eccentric, needs a little work. But to use intimate details about my dead husband in order to get close to me or for God knows what other reason, that's unforgivable. You're sick.
I love you.
Don't call me.
Don't call me.
Wow.
Yeah, I love this movie. To me, this movie is better than even Ghosts as a love story. But then again, it has Tia Leone, who I absolutely adore. Greg Kinnear plays a part of her dead husband who goes through Ricky Gervais. And Ricky Gervais is killer. It's solid, classic Ricky Gervais. He only cares about himself. He's that kind of character in this film as well. And then he's inundated with all these people in the afterlife because they can't move on. They can't go, you know, to the light in the sky, if you will, until they get something done, accomplished. So they're all desperate for his help. And of course, he won't help anybody. He only cares about himself. It is such a funny movie. It's called Ghost Town. And the reason I picked that movie, moreover than the clip is just it introduces, the topic, if you will. But the movie made me think of today's show because, he's inundated with all these desperate people with a voice wanting to get through, get across. And it kind of made me think about you, Robin, because we are going to spend the next half an hour talking about you, talking about your book, and talking about what I wonder whether it's a gift or a curse, and you refer to it as simply an ability.
Yes.
So we'll be right back after this commercial to talk with Robin.
You're listening to The Badge Zone. We'll be back right after this. If you like The Badge Zone, you'll love their books, starting with Darren's award-winning Twisted But True book trilogy with close to 100 compelling and funny true crime stories that American detectives with Lieutenant Joe Kenda producer called the perfect blend of humor, heroism, and honor. And retired Colonel Dave Grossman declared, Darren's Twisted But True books are hilarious, deep, and powerful. Each book in the series received the Pinnacle Award for the best true crime book, and a story from book two was featured on an ID Channel television show. And Robin's most recent book, Soul Stirrings, reviewed as an often humorous and spiritually uplifting story of a widow's soul-searching pilgrimage to the afterlife. Darren called it a love story, a ghost story, an investigative story. It's a story like no other. And Robin's first book, Victim No More, where she shares her harrowing experiences with rape and domestic violence as Robin takes the reader on a very personal journey through the morass of abuse and loss, and ultimately, survival. These Badge Zone books should be on everybody's top 10 reading lists. And now, back to the Badge Zone.
You know, I would say, Robin, you correct me if I'm wrong. We've been working together, doing the show, and now dear friends.
Mm-hmm.
What, going on 6 years?
A little over 6 years.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I believe it started in January 6 years ago.
Yeah.
January, February.
And we got to know each other. You've got to know me through my books. I've got to know you through your books. Spending the show with these guests and seeing how we watching you do your show and how you interact with your guests. It's all about the story, the strength of helping others, your posts. You're a very spiritual, beautiful human being that truly cares about people. And you're strong. Oh, all get out. But you have a soft middle.
Yeah, like a gooey marshmallow from what I'm told.
Yeah, yeah. I would say that's an accurate metaphor. But I didn't know about your ability. And again, I say that with all sincerity. And when I talk about it, I look at it as a gift. I know people that have the gift think everyone can do it, and I get that. But I look at it as a gift or a curse, depending on the individual. That's why the whole Ricky Gervais character in this film, you know, at first it's a curse for him until he kind of opens up and then he truly cares, and then he uses it as a gift.
Right.
How does such a gift start, or an ability start?
Well, for me, I never really understood that I had that ability from childhood. I mean, I saw things and heard things and felt things and had visions of my grandmother before she died. You know, I didn't have a close relationship with my grandmother, but to see her at the foot of my bed the day before she died, you know, it just kind of shakes you a little bit as a child. You don't really think about it and you don't really talk about it. It wasn't shunned in the house because we, you know, I call him my sperm donor because there's a history there, as you know. He would read Edgar Casey books, and they would talk about past lives. They would talk about reincarnation. They would talk about psychic abilities. And along the line, I heard that my grandmother had those abilities. So, you know, I guess it didn't scare me at all at that point, but I really didn't understand that I had those abilities until things happened. I mean, at the age of 10, being in the principal's office and being bullied, I was angry because I got in trouble for fighting back and defending myself, and I concentrated so much energy on a stack of pencils that they went flying everywhere. Now, that did scare the hell out of me. The only thing I'd ever seen was Escape to Witch Mountain, telekinesis, but I was afraid of it. It was very overpowering for me to know that that much anger could create a force to move an object, and you don't believe in it. I mean, I'm always a skeptic. But I think where it really began to take shape with me was when I started experiencing a lot of death in my life. From the ages of 22 to 33, I lost 41 people. And these were people that were in my circle. Some were family members, but most of them were people that I looked up to that were my mentors and friends, close friends, everything from car accidents to cancer to suicide. And I was going to 5, 6, 7 funerals a year for a span of years. And this ability began to take form, but I really didn't know that it was there either at this point. Just little things happening that you never really think about until the biggest death of my life happened.
And that's exactly where I kind of wanted to go with this in terms of a beautiful, sad, tragic segue. You talk about those closest to you.
Mm-hmm.
This is the most closest person in anyone's life.
He still is.
Your soulmate.
He still is. And you know, they always say things in life about you only get one chance at this, and that's not true. I'm here to tell you that even though you have a soulmate and you may lose that soulmate, there's another soulmate out there for you. It doesn't mean you have to close yourself off to that. I was 33 when he died, and he gave me the most powerful, powerful gift. And Darren, Cliff and I were only together 17 months. We were only married 7 months when he died of cancer. But he gave me the greatest gift of all, because I describe it in the book, and it's just so surreal. I use movies to talk about it, because if you've seen it in a movie, you can understand it. If I'm sitting here trying to tell you and describe it, you don't get it. But on his deathbed, he was supposed to be comatose, and the whole family was around. And if you remember the part of the movie in Poltergeist where the mom is standing at the base of the stairs and her baby passes through her, and she talks about, you know, my baby just went through me.
Yes. And she gets happy and she's crying joy. Yeah. And I remember that scene vividly.
And when I came back into Cliff's hospital room, he was around, you know, his whole family was around him. My son was there. They were very close. I put my hand on him, and his mother said, "Cliff, the love of your life is here." And I put my hand on him, on his leg. He was cold. He was stiff and cold. And, you know, we decided that, you know, he made a comment to me a while back that he didn't want to be a vegetable. He didn't want to live on a machine. And they had kept me very well aware of what was going on with the cancer. He was done for. There was nothing they could do to save him. His organs were gone. So his time had come. Putting my hand on his actual body at that point, he took a breath, opened up his eyes from a coma, looked around the whole entire room, let a gasp out. And it was that moment he passed away. His life force is the only thing I can call it. His life force passed through his body, in through my hand, up my arm, and in through my chest and out. And I've never felt anything quite that powerful. And as I'm looking at him, he's smiling. He's physically gone from the body, but yet his body is smiling at all of us. And his mother actually took a picture. We have a photograph. In that moment of death, he showed me there was nothing to fear.
Wow, what a gift.
I was 33 years old, Darren, and to sit there and to lose somebody that I had poured my heart and soul into for the last year and a half and had gone through these trials of cancer, and then seeing this man smile in the body, in the flesh. He's no longer there, but his body was left smiling. That showed me at that very moment that I have nothing to be afraid of. And within a matter, not even 30 seconds after he was gone, I started hearing his voice in my head.
And when you heard that, did you think initially about your childhood and this ability? Or do you think at first you kind of pass off as just, I love them so much that I kind of hear him, I think.
Yeah, that's kind of the first. Latter. You know, you when you have these abilities honing in, and, you know, I always say we all have that ability to do that. Just some of us, religion, you know, things we're told
somehow
when we're young.
Open to it.
This is demonic. I was just very open to it because I had had a lot of defenses down because of so much death. And then being with him and talking about life and death all the time, it was just something that was so overpowering to me. It felt so awesome to be able to have that connection. And, you know, there's no physical connection. I can't touch you. You can't touch me. I can touch you, but you're gone. But yeah, I still have that connection. And he just said something that made me laugh. And everyone's looking at me in the middle of their grief. And they're like, what? And I said, he's telling me something. Now, I don't remember now. I know I wrote it in the book. I don't remember what he said to me, but he was joking around and laughing like the illness was completely gone and he was happy. And, you know, the skeptic I was at first, I'm like questioning it. Am I just hearing this? But no, he actually talked to me a lot.
I love how you talked about how he was at a better place, because we've had a lot of guests on, even Badge Boys, when I was doing Badge Boys, and certainly your show, and then, but especially on the Badge Zone, when they talk about moving on, they talk about, oh, it was such a beautiful place. I didn't want to come back,
right,
you know, that
right.
near-death experience or death experience coming back. And when you wrote the book, if you could talk about the... We obviously know why you wrote the book, if you will, but maybe we don't. Maybe we don't. Maybe there was a catalyst, a reason you chose the timing of that.
Just like the first book I wrote, it took many years for me to put things down because I had written portions of stuff and had set it aside. And I had a friend who was supposed to help me write the book back in 01 after Cliff died, but he got distracted and it never got done. It just sat. So when I sat down, I had so many experiences. You know, I had a friend who committed suicide in 2017 and finding her body and having to deal with that. I never had a chance to mourn the loss of her because I was helping all of our other friends deal with the loss of her, because suicide is a wrecking ball.
Yes,
it destroys
it
everyone. And when
yes,
you find
is.
The body, you deal with everyone saying, was it murder? Was it suicide? All this other stuff, or I wish I'd been the one to find her. It's like, trust me, you don't want to be the one that has to live with what you saw. So that started it. But then a short time after that, in 2018, I had my experiences at Ground Zero that really threw me for a loop, and connecting with past spirits who had died in the tower on 9/11, I decided I have to do something with this, because why do these things keep happening to me? And then I pulled out all those old manuscripts of when I wrote about the visitations from Cliff and all of the things that he was doing. I had actually forgotten how much he was with me after he died. And he was very present spiritually and doing things physically, like the movie Ghost, like Patrick Swayze was doing to get Demi Moore's attention. He was very present to help me and my son get through his passing and his family, knowing that he was okay where he was. So going back to sit down and to write this book, it took on a bigger life than I could have ever imagined, because I thought I was just trying to solve the whole 9/11 thing. Why are all these dead people from 9/11 connecting with me, trying to make sense and grieve the loss of one of my best friends who took her life, to then going back and looking at, wow, this actually started 20 some odd years ago with the love of my life dying from cancer and visiting me. And it just took on a whole new life of itself. And I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop writing, because it's a self-realization. You know, it's the skeptic in me going, oh, this isn't true. Even those of us who have these abilities question it. I question it even today, and it happens continuously. Every day, all day, I'm getting visitations from people. I'm helping people with this. And I've had people say, you should quit your job and go do this full time. I'm like, you don't understand. That's not me. I can't conjure up these people. I allow it to just happen. I'm the radio frequency. I could never sit at a table, and God bless people who are psychics and mediums that can do this to help people. I'm not that person. I refuse to be that person, because I don't know how this happens to me. I don't know why it happens to me. I question it every time. I'm learning that I can understand when it's their thoughts coming through me now. I can understand when it's not my thoughts. And that's hard to distinguish when you're getting these visitations at first. And writing this book was very therapeutic and cathartic. As we always tell the guests on the show, it is the best way to your healing. And even though she took her life in 2017, it took me till 2020 to mourn the loss of her, because I still hadn't done that yet. And then I went back and I revisited some of these things that happened with the spiritual side, and being 19 and having a ghost on the phone talking to me that needed to be set free, as you're talking about this particular movie with Ricky and Taya. It's, you don't know what your purpose is in this. And they talk to you. And there are times in the very beginning after my husband died, I met a guy who was living with one of my friends. And his father needed to get through to him, because they had talked on that spiritual level, but they were arguing and fighting. He's fighting with a dead guy in his head. That's a good one, right? Fighting with his dad, didn't want to hear from him anymore. And because of a chance meeting, his dad now knew I was a radio receiver. And just like that scene in the movie, Henry VIII, I am, he's singing it all night long to piss off Whoopi Goldberg. This guy did the same thing, but he didn't sing. He paced back and forth, what was sounding like on a wood floor with heavy shoes, constant, you know, constant, just like getting pissed off because I didn't know what this was. Kept me up all night long, hours and hours and hours. Next day, I still heard it. I still heard it. And I'm like, I have no idea what the hell this is. There's no one in the room with me. I'm all by myself, but yet I'm hearing somebody pacing and being pissed off at me. So I sit down at my computer. I'm like, what the fuck do you want? Enough already. And as soon as I said that, he goes, okay, open up a page. And he had me start typing stuff in a Word file. I had no idea what the hell was going on. I still kept looking around the room. So, you know, with this book, I'm able to put things down and actually reread it to myself. Because, you know, as you go through the editorial process, you're rereading it and you're going, I went through this shit? Seriously? I went through this? I still have a hard time believing, and I lived it. I have a hard time believing, especially the 9/11 stuff. I have a hard time believing. And I even was given the gift of connecting with my best friend who killed herself and understanding why she did it, understanding the regret she had for the moment she did that, and understanding that She changed my view because of beliefs that you hear growing up. And I'm just going to say this. It's not a disclaimer to take your way out. So please understand that when I say this, do not take your own life. Get help. Okay, let's just state that. But she showed me that suicides go to the same place. We all go to God's kingdom. We all go to the light. We all go to the other side. But the thing about it is, when it's suicidal, you have to come back and go through things again to learn those lessons, because it goes against the natural grain. You're not supposed to take your own life. So I want to reiterate that for you guys out there who are in trouble. Please do not take your own life. Ask us to help you. Reach out. Your friends and family are here for you. There are people that can help you, but understand that you're not damned to hell.
You know, I'm glad we went down this path, because when I was in homicide with the night detectives, primarily our job was going from suicide to suicide. We dealt with industrial death. We dealt with accidental. We dealt with all the, I hate to say it, easy death investigations.
Yeah.
And then the day shift homicide guys, 12 deep of the squad. It was me and my three detectives. But the reason I'm bringing all this up is I'd go to these suicides, and it was just so devastating doing the advisement to, you know, inform these loved ones of,
yeah,
that they took their life. It's the most cruel thing in the world. And I always have a common statement, because in maybe 80 to 90% of them, alcohol was involved.
Yes.
And I always told them that had they awakened from this death, let's say, you know, it was a near death and they didn't succeed, they would come out of this drunken stupor and say, oh my God, I did what?
Exactly.
And I would always tell the parents that, so they wouldn't blame themselves, because the parents will always blame themselves.
Right.
The spouse blame herself, his self. And it's such a cruel thing to do. So I love the fact, you know, no, it's not that it's about the evil of what you did. It's about the painful consequences of what you did and those,
yeah,
that you leave behind.
And when she came to me in a very beautiful white light, but she was very regretful of the actions that she did in that moment. And she felt so bad, because there was an experience I had after one of her memorials where I in the movie, the guy jumps in Whoopi Goldberg's body. I kind of had that feeling, because I was not me. And I felt that cold, dead inside. I felt that always feeling of somebody looking, I have to look over my shoulder because someone's after me. She lived in such terror with her depression and always in fear of having stalkers and weird situations. And then showing me how cold and dead she felt inside because of the depression. I would never want to feel like that, but she showed me that. And that scared the living shit out of me, Darren, coming home from a memorial, not knowing what I was experiencing. And it took a couple days, but she actually came through another friend to apologize to me, outside of me, to let me know. She just wanted me to understand how she was feeling in her life and why she took her life, even though she regretted doing it, because now, you know, I already know this for a fact. She's already been reincarnated within a couple of years, because now she has to go through that learning process again. But, and some people may not believe in reincarnation, but there's a lot to learn. And I myself didn't understand a lot of stuff, but trying to get a grasp on having these abilities and then doing what's best, because sometimes they do come at you.
And that's when I talk about the gift opposed to the curse. And and I think that's a valid argument. And I think the end result is the individual and how they deal with this ability, whether it becomes a curse or it becomes a gift. As far as gifts, if you could talk about, in closing, the book, you writing it, I clearly, trust me, and you know this, you know, it's cathartic. I get that. Mine was. Tell me about those who have reached forward to you, having read the book and having helped, because you have this great podcast called Get Real. It's you get real, but you get real to help people. Somebody else's pain can help others deal with their pain, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And your book, as I kind of said on the back cover, is so many things. It's a love story. It's a ghost story. It's an investigative story. It's a story like no other. And I really mean that. And that's just me off the top of my head, you know, talking about your book. What has been your takeaway from those that have read it?
Well, one of the biggest ones here, I have a show host who, at the time, his wife was dealing with cancer when I had finished the book. I sent them the book and did a special inscription, and she had since passed away after reading the book. But the most beautiful thing about it, with that experience, the book is called Soul Stirrings. So this guy who was a famous musician who toured with people, he gets on the phone and he calls me and he'll say, I had a soul stirring today. My wife visited me. And he just did it the other day. And she's been gone for a number of years. He does it again. He'll text me every time he has a soul stirring. She'll visit him and let him know she's okay. He actually brought him and his current lady together because they both lost spouses. And that to me is the most beautiful gift in the world, is because I'm trying to tell people, look, they don't want you to sit and mourn their loss forever. They want you to move on. They want you to be happy. If that means finding another mate, then that's what you do. And sometimes they are responsible for helping bring your mate into your life. As with me in the past year, I have a guy in my life and his father and my late husband brought us back together because we share a connection. But the beautiful thing, Darren, that I've learned more than anything is that if you believe you've seen, heard, smelled, a song triggers a memory of that person, if you believe you've been visited, a dream, if you believe you've had a visitation, if you hear them, if you see them, smell them, whatever.
A sign.
Thank you. If you get those and you believe it to be true, it doesn't matter what anyone else says. Because remember this one thing. We all know wind exists, but we don't see the wind until it blows through the trees and our hair. So always believe that if someone is there visiting you, saying hi to you, showing up, letting you know that they're loved, pennies from heaven, dimes on the floor, feathers, everything, believe it to be true, because they never do leave us.
I love that. That's a perfect way to end this. Other than, I'm going to say this because I don't want you to have to say it, and because you won't. The book is amazing. I strongly, strongly encourage you to read Soul Stirrings. It was absolutely one of the most beautiful books I've ever read. Read it in one sitting. It was truly remarkable, because you can't really describe it, because it's so many things for so many people. Thank you for writing it, and thank you for being my dear friend.
Oh, thank you. Make me cry.
And until next week, stay safe. You're in the zone.
Thanks for listening. This week's journey into the Badge Zone is coming to an end. But join Darren next time as we delve deeper into the zone, the Badge Zone.